You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
It was just past 3 a.m. when she found herself walking the empty streets. No plan, no shoes, and no one left to trust. In the dead cold of a violent city, she cried out not for help, but for mercy. She wasn't looking for a miracle. She just wanted a way out of the affair, out of the chaos, out of the life she no longer recognized. But sometimes when a person is pushed to the edge, when desperation meets the darkness, something answers. What appeared that night wasn't a hallucination. It wasn't a dream. It was a man, dressed in black, standing silent beneath a single streetlight. And while she couldn't explain where he came from, what haunted her more was how he vanished without a trace. Was he just a man? A warning or something more? Let's get to the letter. They write, "Tony, I've never written to anyone like this before, but your show has helped me come to terms with something I've carried for years, something I still don't fully understand. I know it might sound unbelievable, but I swear on my life. Every word is true. I think I met my guardian angel, and not in the sweet, glowing light kind of way. No wings, no halo, just a man. A man in the middle of the night who shouldn't have been there. It started during the winter of 2005. That was the year my whole life started to unravel. I was with the father of my kids. We'd been together since I was 16. He was my first real love, the one I thought I'd be with forever. But by then, things had turned ugly. We had three kids, too many secrets, too much damage. We were both cheating, both angry, and both pretending we were still some version of ourselves. From back when we were young and things made sense, I was deep into an affair that had started as an escape and ended up feeling like a trap. I couldn't breathe anymore. Then one night, everything came to a head. It was cold. I remember that clearly. That biting kind of cold that stings your face when you breathe. We got into an argument, me and my kid's father. But this time, it didn't stop at yelling. Things got physical. It spilled out of the house, down the front steps. He slammed the door behind me, and I was just out there, alone, in the middle of the night. No jacket, no one to call. The street was quiet, like the city had fallen asleep and forgotten me. That's the thing about a place like this. It's loud until it isn't, and when the noise stops, it gets dangerous. There's a reason you don't walk alone at night where I'm from. But that night, I didn't care. I just walked. I let my feet take me wherever they wanted, and my heart was pleading the whole time. I started talking out loud. to God, I guess, telling him I was tired, telling him I messed everything up. I wanted to go back to before the affair, before the anger. I wanted my family whole again. I wanted to feel like I wasn't lost. I was crying as I walked, big, gasping sobs. It's strange what you'll say when you don't think anyone's listening. I don't remember choosing where I ended up. But when I looked up, I was standing in front of an old church just a block or so from home. I'd passed it 100 times before, but never really looked at it. That night, though, it looked like a place I could breathe. There were about 10 stone steps leading up to the doors. I climbed them slowly, still shaking from the cold, and sat down with my arms on my knees and my head buried in them. I just stayed there, crying, praying, pouring out every piece of guilt and fear that had been sitting in me for months. And then he spoke. A voice, male, calm, gentle. "Are you okay?" That's all he said at first. I looked up fast. I hadn't heard anyone approach. There was no sound, no footsteps. But there he was, standing at the edge of the street under the glow of a yellow street lamp. I'll never forget how he looked. He was black, tall, clean-shaven, except for a mustache and a goatee that connected. He wore black sunglasses, yes, at night, and a perfectly tailored black coat, matching black slacks with that crisp crease you only get from dry cleaning, and shiny shoes that looked like something out of a jazz club from the 50s, the kind people call gaiters. And on his head, a black hat with a short brim, like something out of another era. He was beautiful, not in a romantic way, just striking, otherworldly. But I was terrified. I jumped to my feet and started yelling, "Stay back! I don't know you! Stay away!" My voice cracked and my hands were up like I was fending off a bear. But he didn't move. Not an inch. He stayed perfectly still under that street lamp and said, again, this time softer, "Everything is going to be okay." I didn't know what to do. I just dropped back onto the steps and cried harder. I buried my head in my arms again. I didn't want to look at him. I didn't want to believe what was happening. I kept praying, whispering for protection, for him to go away. And then, silence. I waited maybe 30 seconds, maybe a minute. Then I looked up. He was gone, not walking away, not turning a corner, not across the street, just gone. I stood up and scanned the street. I ran down the stairs yelling, "Where did you go? Where are you?" But there was no answer. No movement. The city was dead silent again. It was like he'd vanished into thin air. I ran home. I didn't care how cold it was anymore. I locked the door behind me, curled up on the floor, and cried until I fell asleep. I don't know what I saw that night, Tony. I don't know who that man was, but I believe he was sent to me. Not as a punishment, not as a threat, but as a sign, a warning, a promise. Something changed after that. I didn't tell anyone at first, not even my kid's father. How do you explain something like that? I saw a man in black appear under a streetlight and then vanish into thin air. It sounds like something from a dream, but it wasn't. I was wide awake, cold, sore, sobbing, and I can still feel how real that moment was. The calm in his voice, the stillness of the air, the way I felt, even in my panic. Safe. But something about him stayed with me. Not just the image, though I could draw his face from memory even now, but the feeling he left behind. It was like a weight lifted, like someone had heard me, really heard me. In the weeks after that night, I kept expecting to run into him again. Maybe in the neighborhood, maybe in daylight when everything feels less impossible. But it never happened. Instead, I started dreaming about him. Always the same dream. I'm standing on those church steps again, but it's warmer this time. The air heaves. I can feel it in my skin, like electricity. Right before a storm. He's standing at the curb, same clothes, same stillness. Only this time he doesn't speak. He just nods. Not goodbye. More like, "You'll understand." I'd wake up crying, not from fear, but from something else I couldn't name. Sometimes during the day, I think I saw him in my peripheral vision, walking past the corner store, standing by the stop sign. But every time I turned to look, no one was there. I know what that sounds like. I questioned my sanity, I really did. But I wasn't spiraling anymore. In fact, for the first time in a long time, I started pulling myself together. The day after that night at the church, I ended the affair. Just like that. I called him and told him it was over, that I was done lying, done running. He didn't take it well, but I didn't back down. I told him I was going to fix my family, no matter how long it took. It wasn't easy. Marcus didn't trust me, and to be honest, I didn't fully trust him either. But we started over, piece by piece. We went to counseling. We talked, really talked, about the pain, about the betrayal, about the kind of parents we wanted to be. It was ugly sometimes, but it was real. 6 years later, we got married. We built our trust back from the ground up. And through it all, I never forgot about the man in black. He became something of a symbol for me. I started calling him my guardian. Not to others, just to myself. Then something happened that made everything feel even more surreal. We were at a wedding, me and Marcus, at the same church where I had seen him that night. I hadn't been back there since, not even once. I don't know why. Maybe I was afraid it would look different in daylight. Smaller, less mysterious, but being there brought everything back in a rush. During the reception, I wandered through the hallway just off the main chapel, and there it was. It's a painting. It wasn't big. Maybe 16 by 20 inches, framed in gold. It hung on a narrow section of wall by the office door. I almost missed it, but when I looked closer, my legs went numb. It was him, a black man. Wearing a black coat, black hat, dark sunglasses, same goatee, same pressed slacks, same polished shoes. He was standing under a streetlight with shadows behind him and this calmness in his face. No title, no plaque. Just a signature at the bottom in tiny script I couldn't read. I stared at that painting for a long time. I must have looked insane just standing there. But I didn't care. I wanted to ask someone where it came from, who painted it. But I didn't. Some part of me was scared of the answer, because if someone else had seen him, then maybe he wasn't just mine. Or maybe he was never meant to be seen at all. I haven't dreamed of him in years now, and I've never seen him again. But that night lives inside me, not like a haunting, more like a reminder, a silent presence behind every decision I've made since. I don't know what I saw, Tony. Maybe it was a manifestation. Maybe my mind made him up to cope. But if that were true, why was he so specific, so detailed? Why did he feel realer than anything else in my life at the time? Was he an angel, a messenger, or something older? Something we don't have a name for anymore? All I know is he showed up when I asked for help from the depths of my soul. And he vanished when I started to stand again. Yours in truth, Daniel W. It's a strange thing, the way moments of crisis can open unseen doors. For some, it's coincidence. For others, it's faith. But what Danielle experienced that night outside a church on a quiet street defies easy explanation. She wasn't hallucinating. She wasn't asleep. She was wide awake, grieving her choices, searching for meaning, and something answered. Now let's examine what might have happened. From a psychological standpoint, extreme emotional states, especially those tied to trauma, guilt, and isolation, can create vivid, seemingly external experiences. Sleep deprivation, stress, and cold exposure can fuel visual or auditory hallucinations. In moments of despair, the mind can generate figures of comfort or authority tailored to what we most need to see. Was the man a projection of Danielle's yearning to be seen, forgiven, protected? Maybe, but that doesn't explain the details. The polish on his shoes, the crease in his pants, the calm in his voice, the total absence of sound, no footsteps before or after, and then the painting, hanging in the very church where she saw him. No name, no context, no explanation, just there, like a memory made manifest. Many who have faced similar encounters describe a figure that seems to exist between worlds. Some call them guardian angels, others spirits in human form. They appear only when needed and disappear without a trace, not to frighten, but to guide. Could this have been one of them? Or does our world contain thin places where the boundary between prayer and presence becomes so fragile that something else steps through? Danielle's story lingers, not because of fear, but because of grace. Something or someone answered her cry for help, and whether angel, ghost, or guardian, it left her with a message few ever receive. You are not alone. Think about that. The next time you pass a stranger on a silent street and wonder who or what might be standing beneath the streetlight.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.